please help me welcome our speaker tonight, Tina from Voorhees, New Jersey.
Hi guys, my name is Tina. I'm an alcoholic. Thank you so much for having me. I'm a replacement, so I'm going to do the best that I can. And I didn't know where we were coming, and we drove up here. And I just, like, my ears were popping on the way here, and my girls with me were, like, taking Snapchats like tourists because we're from South Jersey, and it doesn't look like this, but it's a beautiful place for a meeting. I'm happy to be here. I have a sobriety date. It's May 7th, 2013, yesterday, actually, which is unbelievable. And I have a sponsor named Adrian. She's speaking here, I think, in a few weeks, and she's, like, the best thing that ever happened to me. And I sponsor other women in this program. I have a home group, The Unshakable Foundation. We meet Tuesday nights in Voorhees, New Jersey at 7:30, and we go through the book with a different speaker each week, and it really feels like home to me. It's an incredible group. If you guys are ever in South Jersey, stop by. And I have another home group. I don't know if that's allowed, but I actually just got to start a meeting with some friends of mine called the Welcome Home Group, and it's exciting when you stick around here and get inspired and get to build the fellowship you crave. And it's cool, like, what's happened in a few short months. We're bringing, you know, this message into a clubhouse where I went to a lot when I first got sober. And I went there at 10 o'clock at night every night, bawling my eyes out, like, begging for help. And I'm so glad they had a place for me, you know what I mean? And now I get to go there and offer a solution to other people, so... I guess I'll tell you guys a little bit about what I was like, what happened, and what I'm like now. Like I said, I grew up in South Jersey. I have a mother and a father who all they ever knew was alcoholism. Like, I believe this is a family disease. They both come from a long line of drinkers. Yesterday was my sobriety date, and, like, we celebrate sobriety dates more than birthdays in my family. That's just the way it was. Like, every family member called me. And I don't know, it's just funny. I have a couple aunts and uncles who are sober through Alcoholics Anonymous. My dad's, like, a hard drinker. His whole family drinks a lot, Irish, Italian, Catholic family. And, you know, I bring that up not because it really matters all that much, but what it did was it planted this idea of what alcoholism was and what it looked like for me in a young age. And I went to Alateen, and I saw Al-Anon meetings and AA meetings, and I, like, there was a mystery about what this disease was and, like, why all these people that look so different came to these rooms. But for me, like, I knew from a young age that I wasn't going to go too hard, if you will, like my aunts and uncles who were sober. Because, like, half my family drank, half of them were sober. And, like, I fell in love with the effects produced by alcohol, like, way before I ever drank, if that makes sense. I knew who I wanted to be like and who I didn't want to be like. And then I really believed, you know, even though we celebrate sobriety a lot in my family, that, like, it was a decision, you know. It was poor choices that made us alcoholic. So I have this spiritual malady that I believe I was born with. And, like, from a young age, my family members would always say, like, Tina, you're just too much. I was just, like, restless, irritable, and discontent all the time. I had an insatiable appetite for enough of anything that made me feel good. I, like, seemed like I used crack as, like, a toddler. Like, I was just psychotic all the time. And I could never get enough to satisfy me in this world. And, you know, my mom remarried an alcoholic who drank a lot, and he came in and out of these rooms. And so I grew up at AA picnics and AA barbecues. And, like, I knew AA didn't work because he never stayed sober, you know. So these are these old ideas. I love that you guys started this off with the set-aside prayer, because it's, like, I just come in here for years and years, and I can't hear anything that you're saying because I know. You know what I mean? That's, like, my biggest flaw when I walk in here, is that I know what I need, and I know what you guys are doing here. And I think it's great, you know what I mean? But I don't want any part of it. It separated me from freedom for a long, long time. So anyway, you know, things happened to me in my childhood that maybe disconnected me from the faith that I was raised with. I was raised Catholic and never identified with that God. But either way, you know, I can still remember, like, there's a lot of my childhood that I forget, like, a lot of memories that I can't remember. Maybe I blotted it out of my consciousness or whatever, but, like, the day I picked up my first drink, like, I remember the smell in the air. I remember the jeans that I was wearing. I remember the feeling, that I had when I saw, like, the glimmer of this, like, bottle, the excitement that came with that effect that I had seen produced in all these people for so many years. And I remember, fallen on the dirt and the ground behind like the Wawa where we drank it. And like I remember feeling that effect produced by alcohol for the first time, like a spiritual experience. And like, you know, people talk about crossing a line, you know, at some point in their drinking where they lost control. And like, I do believe in like this allergy that we all have. And I believe it, like the first time I drank, the phenomenon craving developed, because I'm not like, you know, obviously I'm a little bit younger than some people here. I just celebrated 4 years sober and I'm 25, and I've been in several rehabs before that. Like as soon as I touched alcohol, I just didn't stop, you know? So, and I know that, you know, I had no idea how all right I wasn't until I had that first drink, you know? Like, I had no idea how disconnected from all of you that I was until I took a drink, and the effect produced by alcohol made me feel like enough all of a sudden. Like, I could talk to you, and I could say the things I wanted to say, and I could be who I always knew I was, but I was too afraid to show you. And it gave me this sense of power that I'd never experienced before. And so I went on and I drank as much as I could whenever I could. And like, you know, I can look back now and see like all of this unmanageability that accumulated like right off the rip. I mean, I was going to Camden like by the time I was 15 for actual alcohol. But like for me, I justified all of it. And those years like looked like me not being able to take accountability for anything that I did. Me not being able to see that alcohol had anything to do with any of the consequences that I was accumulating. And I was always in the wrong place at the wrong time. The problem with growing up in a family that, like, has a lot of alcoholism and recovery is, like, I got thrown out of the house at a really young age because I wasn't being enabled. And I felt really sorry for myself for that. But I knew that, like, you know, I was just doing what kids do. And, you know, this thing progressed for me really quickly. I started going to institutions from a young age, you know, and we were talking about on the way up here that like that was a really comfortable thing for me. Like I would go started, you know, these phases of being back into a corner because I would catch some charges or I didn't want to go to jail. So I would go to rehab for that reason and that reason only. And, you know, I would be in there and I would start to like have thoughts like you better stop going to rehab or everyone's really going to think you're an alcoholic. Because I swore that I wasn't, you know what I mean? I just like to have a good time. And if you had the life I had, you would also enjoy partying. That's all it was. And I would go to these institutions and I would pick up little bits and pieces of what you said, but I wasn't like you guys. And I'd come out and every time, like, you know, my runs would get shorter. And, you know, like, I don't really like talking a lot about what it was like, but like what I can tell you is when I put anything into my body, it demanded more. There wasn't like a single time that I can think of that happened that wasn't the case. And as I started getting more serious consequences and I'd have to go to probation on a Monday morning and have a clean urine or I was going to jail, I would have every intention on staying sober that weekend so I wouldn't go to jail. And on Saturday morning, I would wake up and I would have no choice but to put something into my body. And then I would have to go and get stuff to clean my system. And I'd have every intention on giving myself the best shot I could by not doing it again on Sunday. And I couldn't, and I'd pick up again, and I'd succumb to this thing. And it would be Monday morning, and I'd have every intention on picking up clean urine and going to that test so I wouldn't go to jail and break my mom's heart again. And I wouldn't even be able to make it to the probation office because I had to get one more. You know, and, like, this, like, abnormal life was so comfortable for me. It's, like, all I ever knew. Like, there was never going back to when things were normal because there never was normal. And that's just, like, my experience. And I was comfortable in that. All I knew was fear of the life that I chose. And there were tons of external consequences, and none of them ever scared me enough to get me sober. I would have this mother, and I'd call her, and I'd beg her for money. I would tell her that I'm going to kill myself if she doesn't bring me money. And she would drop me off a rotisserie chicken and tell me to go to a meeting. And I would be just enraged, you know what I mean? And, you know, like I destroyed the relationships with everyone in my life, and you know, I didn't even want them. Like, I didn't come into AA to get, like, my family back or something like that. Like, I never had, I lost the desire from a young age to be the person that God intended me to be a daughter, to be a sister. All I knew was how to get one more, and that's all I ever wanted. I was, like, convinced after a couple rehabs that I was supposed to die an alcoholic death, you know, and like I said, like, being institutionalized was really comfortable for me. So I remember, you know, things were just really bad, and every time I'd pick up, I'd be homeless and carless and all these things on the outside that made me think it was okay. The next job, the next relationship, they're gone, and, you know, I'd go to rehab again and, like, start to have these feelings that, like, maybe, just maybe, you belong here. Maybe, you know, you can't do those other substances, and one day you'll be able to drink again. There was never a notion that, like, complete abstinence was an option. But I remember things got really bad, and, like, I would pick these sobriety dates. 10, 11, 12 was that one. I'd always get, like, these big recovery tattoos. I would get progress, and I used to survive, now I live, and then I'd pick up again, you know, with no thought. With somewhat in intentions on staying sober, I really like that sobriety date. And, you know, I get into rehab and I go to detox for a couple days and I'm absolutely dying. I want to run away. I can't stand the way I feel and I don't understand why I'm sober and I feel this horrible. And for the first time in my life, I took a suggestion and I got on my knees and I prayed. And like that obsession was lifted just for that moment. And just for a second, I considered that maybe there was a God, you know, which I had sworn off. Like, I knew there wasn't a power. How could my life look the way it did? And of course, like I said, all those foxhole prayers in the back of cop cars, but, you know, I didn't believe in anything. And so I remember that sobriety day because for the first time I got out and I went to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, and a woman would grab me after the meeting when I was trying to run out early, and she would tell me that she was my sponsor. And then I was going to come over her house. And I was so terrified. Like, I thought I was, like, this self-reliant, confident, cool, young individual. And I'd come into AA, and I would be so beaten and terrified of all of you guys. And I'd come late, and I'd leave early, and I would judge every single one of you people, and I would be so full of fear every time I got out of another rehab. And so I went to this woman's house, and I just remember this because we sat in her little apartment, and she had cats, which I'm allergic to. And she served me edamame in a bowl, and it was like the weirdest experience of my entire life. And I just remember sitting there, like, why did I even submit to this? And I knew in my whole heart that not only was Alcoholics Anonymous not for me, but, like, she wasn't like me. But against my own will, I just sat there to kind of, like, you know, humor her as we went through the doctor's opinion. And, like, for the first time in my life, I could identify with everything that that book said. I had heard that book in a ton of meetings before, and I thought it was, like, old English. But I could relate to, like, all the ways that, like, you know, they describe, like, those different types of alcoholics. You know what I mean? I could relate to that psychopath. I could relate to changing brand and environment because I did those things. And so I thought, you know, maybe I better give this thing a try. We get up into a four-step, and I was going to meetings where they told me to just not drink. And it, you know, hold on to my seat and, you know, just stick around and wait for the miracle to happen. And that's what I did. And I went to, like, three meetings a day because I was absolutely out of my mind. And I remember leaving a meeting one day and with, like, no intention of picking up, and with 4 months sober and all these coins and key tags. And, like, everybody's finally proud of me because, like, a bunch of rehabs later, she's actually maybe doing it. I pick up. You know what I mean? I didn't understand that this first step wasn't about, like, how many charges that I had caught and how many people that I had hurt and what diseases I had contracted. I didn't understand that all of these things weren't on the outside of me, but that the first step tells me that, like, I have no choice but to pick up again if I don't, you know, get power that's sufficient to alcohol. I didn't understand what that meant. Maybe it was explained to me and I wasn't ready to hear it, but either way, I picked up. And I went on, like, a horrific run again, and I pulled everything down around me, and all the consequences piled up on me, and I was so disconnected. Like, I remember, it's just, like, I always remember this day, like, walking through the streets of North Camden, and I've been up for days at a time, and seeing, like, this mother drive past me, and locking, you could hear the lock on her car door with her little kids in the back seat and looking at me, and, like, this whole, like, life flashed before my eyes that I dreamed of for myself, and, you know, this woman was terrified of me. You know what I mean? My family wouldn't let me in their homes. I had robbed all of them. Like, that was old news. There was no shot of being a daughter or a sister. I wasn't welcome anywhere. And the same day, I bump into a couple friends that I'd met in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I literally was underweight and disgusting, and they saw me, and they hugged me, and they treated me like a human being for the first time in a long time, and they gave me a pack of cigarettes, and they asked me, how I was doing. And I never felt more pain than when I saw those two people, and they were probably going to a meeting and just, like, enjoying life. And I, like, knew that wasn't possible for me. And, like, for anybody who's new here, like, I want to talk about, like, surrender. The weird thing about surrender here is, like, it feels like death. Like, I don't know if anyone can get down with that, but, like, when I'm, like, actually willing to hear what you people are saying, to see that maybe there's something that I don't know about what I need, to do something different, to like, maybe try the only thing I haven't tried, like getting a sponsor, a home group, a service position at that home group and going through these 12 steps. Like, in that moment of complete brokenness, when I'm completely out of ideas, when the drink isn't even working anymore, the only power that I could ever count on, that I could ever rely on, that I was willing to risk everything for, isn't even working anymore. That is the darkest moment that there ever is. You know what I mean? There's more fear and terror and bewilderment and pain in that feeling of surrender. And it's only then that, like, we have an opportunity to get some freedom, to get some, like, that's just my experience. For me, surrender looked like having, like, literally no hopes and making these bullshit negotiations with a God I didn't believe in, that I'll do everything that they said to do one more time, and if it doesn't work, I'm going to smoke crack, honestly. That's just was the deal. And, you know, like, people, I hate when speakers say, or I used to hate when they say that, like, you know, my name is Tina and I'm an alcoholic, and I'm sober by the grace of God and my life is beyond my wildest dreams. And, like, the truth of the matter is, like, I'm Tina and I'm an alcoholic and I'm sober by the grace of God, the undeserved gift alone. I don't know why he chose for me to be here other than to carry this message. And my life literally is beyond my wildest dreams, because that's what happened to me. From that dark, painful place, from that broken place of having literally, like, barely even a glimpse of hope that I could have anything like a semblance of a normal life, like drowning in the weight of the consequences, the legal consequences, the financial consequences, full of fear, full of resentment, hating all of you. And hating me, was there a possibility for me to recover from alcoholism, you know? And so what happened is God would separate me from alcohol one last time, and I had, like, a pretty profound, I don't know if I was just out of my mind or, you know, I'm sure it was God, but either way, I had, like, the most horrific week of my life. I was, like, arrested several times, and none of that really matters, but I remember looking up to the sky and saying, like, God, I'm going to try the only thing that I never tried, which is to do everything they said to do. And that's when I made this deal. And at that moment, like, I had this ring that had a skull on it that this drug dealer gave me, and I wore it like a badge of honor in the hood. I'm like a little white girl from the suburbs. But it had, like, a pipe out of its mouth. And in that exact moment, like a metal ring, it just, like, clinked on the ground and fell to the floor. And I, like, dropped to my knees, and I knew that something was listening, something was out there, and something maybe was working all along. And, like, I wish I could say that, like, at that moment, I, like, completely surrendered to this deal, and I, you know, went through the 12 steps, and that's just not my story. My story in Alcoholics Anonymous looks like surrender and then surrender again, and then surrender again, and then more suffering, and then more freedom. You know what I mean? This is the longest time that I've been consistently happy and free, and it's the longest time I've consistently just done what they always said to do. But what happened was I ended up in Florida in a rehab, and, you know, I got sober there, like, because I had an ex-boyfriend down there, and I never tried getting sober in Florida. Like, with all the wrong reasons, to be honest. I have been rehabilitated all... I like, act like I'm a world traveler, but I just went to rehabs all over. But, so I go to Florida, and I go to a rehab, and, you know, like, for whatever reason, I had a first-step experience where I knew that, like, once I put one of absolutely anything into my body, from my own experiences, I couldn't stop. Like, I was sold on that idea. I knew that I had absolutely no power to stop once I started. What I didn't realize was how little choice I had in the ability to stay stopped. And I was down there, and is there a clock anywhere, by the way? I don't have one. Oh, okay. So I'm down there, and I'm sober, and I leave rehab early. My family's not talking to me. I have no money. I have no plan. But I know I got to stay sober. And I have, like, a lot of, I want to say knowledge, but really I could just repeat a lot of things that I had heard from a lot of meetings and a lot of institutions, but I didn't know anything about staying sober. I just knew that I couldn't pick up again. And I'm down there and I leave rehab early and I start running my life again. And I end up managing a halfway house, driving a van around with no license, and helping everyone to stay sober. And I had no idea how to do this. I have no sponsor. I'm not really going to meetings. And I'm like a couple months sober. I'm still estranged from my entire family. And like as each day goes by, that thing inside me is like getting a tighter grip on me, right? I'm losing a little bit of the hope that was restored when I got sober the last time. And like when I stay sober without a solution, I get a little more hopeless as time goes by. I get a little more restless. I get a little more bored. I get a little more afraid about the money that I don't have and what the future is going to look like. And I become more filled with anguish about the past. And I become angrier. Every single resentment that I have just gets bigger and bigger and bigger. And I'm holding everyone in the house as Suboxone, and I'm living next to a heroin dealer in West Palm Beach, and I know I can't drink, but I can't stay sober anymore. And, you know, I say this because it's like the fact that I'm up here is by God's grace alone. Like, there's no reason why I stayed sober. I did everything in this process wrong, you know, and for whatever reason, I decided I needed to go to a meeting, and I think we walked like 2 miles to a meeting, and I walk in and they're reading page 417 and acceptance is the answer to all my problems today. And like, I had never heard that before. You know what I mean? And until I could accept my life exactly as it was, that my family wanted nothing to do with me and I had no money and my food stamp card got stolen and I had absolutely no shot at a life. And I didn't know how to obviously manage my own, and was willing to do something different. You know, I had no shot. So I called that old sponsor and she started going through the book with me on the phone. And I ended up flying back to Jersey and living in an Oxford house, and like what would happen and what happens to me every time I open myself up, and I ask this power for help is he'll like blow the doors off my life. So I come back to Jersey, which I wasn't allowed to leave in the first place, with a bunch of charges, and a family that won't let me near their houses, with literally no income. And I'm in an Oxford house and I'm absolutely terrified. And like, I thank God that he stripped away all those things that could have made me feel like I had anything together in my life, because that's like all I gauged how I was doing. Like how I am has always been determined by how I felt before I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. And when I have nothing, I feel pretty lonely and I feel pretty scared. And so I would start to, you know, walk to meetings every single day and get a home group and like fall in love with Alcoholics Anonymous. You know what I mean? This place with these people that I absolutely hated. I would show up consistently and I would get a little less uncomfortable. And I would get on my knees and I would pray and I would do a third step with another woman and like start to have like these crazy experiences in my life. And like one by one, God would remove like these impossible circumstances. Like I was supposed to go to jail multiple times over, and he would, you know, afford me the opportunity to get out of each confrontation. And like, you know, God made it very evident that he was working in my life, and I started to fall in love with Alcoholics Anonymous. And I like went to my first sober dance, and I never wanted to be drunk so badly in my life. And you know, I was so terrified to write a fourth step, and I hated women so much. You know what I mean? I just hated them. And I would end up going on like a retreat with all these women, and I would meet a priest, and I would call him the day that I was supposed to do my first fifth step. That was the only thing I never had done. And I would do a fifth step with a woman who had like the best intentions, and without her, I wouldn't be here. But she didn't have an experience. She wasn't taken through that book page by page. She just didn't. But she took me through the steps the way that she was taken through the steps, and we would use worksheets. And like, either way, something happened. You know what I mean? I started to believe that there was a God, and I started to believe that I was an alcoholic, and I started to believe that only this God could get me out of it. And we would do a fourth step, and I would list all these resentments down, and like, I was the type of alcoholic who had secrets that I had never said out loud, things that had happened to me that I thought I could never share with another human being. And just reading them alone made me feel so much lighter and so much more able to like look this world in the eye. And I would experience some freedom. And I would get a little taste of the fact that I'm selfish. But the thing was, when we did that fifth step, like, we didn't do a fourth column. That really is a the point of it, but that just, you know, that's not what we did. You know what I mean? So I read all these resentments, and then we were done. And then she had instructed me to burn it in a fire, which I did. And like, the, you know, all we know is what we know. You know what I mean? And this was a sponsor, the only woman I ever trusted with my life. We get to 6th and 7th step, and I didn't really get that. And all of a sudden, like, you know, I was very aware of all these defects, especially in you guys. And like, God started to provide things that I needed. Like, I, you know, got a job working at a Starbucks, and I'd walk to work. And I remember, like, in those days, like, I'd be walking in the snow to work, and I was more grateful than I'd ever been in my life. And I remember, like, starting to experience beauty. And like, you know, being allowed to see my little sisters again, and just being grateful to be sober, and that was enough. And all these new friendships in Alcoholics Anonymous, they were enough for a while. And I'd go to a lot of meetings, and I would like be the first one with my hand up, and I'd tell you guys all about how I was doing. And that was just my experience. And, you know, I lose track of the timeline here, but, you know, I would get to an 8th step, I guess, and I would go out and be instructed on how to make them, and I would approach people and tell them I'm sorry, you know what I mean? Like, I sat down with my mom, and I told her I was sorry for everything that I had done to her, and all the money that I had robbed, and all the pain that I had caused her, not even really being aware of what that looked like. I just did what I was told to do, and, you know, I would continue to be a daughter who took, And what would happen is, like, I didn't like the person that I was becoming sober in Alcoholics Anonymous. So I made a meeting a day for, like, 2 years, and I had a home group, and I had a lot of friends in AA. And I would jump in the car with anybody and go on trips and, like, have a lot of beautiful experiences with this unity portion of the deal, and grow this, you know, to love and understand this fellowship here. And I believed in a God. But the bottom line was, like, I was under the impression that that was all that Alcoholics Anonymous had for me. And I began to get sicker and sicker and sicker in Alcoholics Anonymous. But my pride was huge. See, like, this thing about, like, that I believe to be true is, like, I'm, you know, lack of power is my dilemma. I do not have the power to not pick up a drink on my own. And I also don't have the power to manage my own life. And my experiences would show me that. Me doing the best I can looks like me, you know, leaving rehab early to manage a sobriety house when I have no idea how to stay sober. Me running my own life looks like me just showing up to a lot of meetings and doing the best I can. And, like, I have to be honest with you, in Alcoholics Anonymous, like, I just got sicker and sicker and sicker. And I thought I knew what I was doing. And I started lying. And it all starts, like, subtly. You know what I mean? I start relying on human powers. Like, it's this relationship. And I'm absolutely insane with finances. And I go on a variety of sprees, whether it be food, gym, gambling, sex, relationships, whatever. I'm out of my mind sober. I literally was like a sober crackhead. I slept 3 hours a night. I ran around Alcoholics Anonymous. Everybody knew me. You know what I mean? And I was really big on the amount of time that I had accumulated. But I was getting sicker and sicker and sicker. And I was terrified to tell anybody that I was hurting. And what would happen is one of these victims of mine would relapse who I was dating. And my best friend overdosed and died. And I found out that I was really sick with something as a result of my drinking. And, like, you know, I wanted to pick up, you know, like, these powers stopped working. And I was terrified to say that because everybody knew me in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I think I'm that important. And the bottom line was, I'm like a year sober, and I have absolutely no idea what I suffer from. I talk to God, but I ask him what he can do for me. And, like, that's the best thing that ever happened to me. So I heard about this woman. I was told I should ask this woman for help, who was, like, running around South Jersey screaming from the rooftops about this book. And, like, I don't know about you guys, but I wanted nothing to do with big book meetings because they were really boring. And there was no opportunities to, like, share about your feelings. And I don't see how I could get well without all that. And, like, I'm sober, and I have a job, and I'm literally causing more harm to my family members sober than I was drinking. And like, that's just the type of alcoholic that I am. I'm a taker, I'm a thief, I'm a cheater, I'm a liar. I am sick. You know, drinking is a symptom of my problem. I have a spiritual malady, and I am not content with life. I looked at people in Alcoholics Anonymous who woke up and went to work and went to school and had families and had friendships and always like looked like well put together. And I just didn't understand how they did it. Like, I was baffled because I was exhausted all the time. And I did not know how to go home and just sit still. I did not know peace. And I thought about drinking more and more and more and more. And like when all of this calamity happened in my life, I thought I had two ways out. I was either going to kill myself or drink. Because like what that's you know, and that's why I talk about surrender as like feeling like death. Because it's like in that moment where I'm willing to be honest with another woman about where I really am and to be open to doing something different. Like this honesty and open-mindedness and willingness like comes at a great price for someone like me. Like I have to be so absolutely broken on the outside to be willing to be receptive to somebody's idea that's not my own. And I was, you know, more than anything, I was angry at Alcoholics Anonymous because I thought it did me wrong. I thought I had tried here. I thought I had had everything that this program had to offer me. And thank God I was wrong about that. But I meet this woman who's like screaming from the rooftops about Alcoholics Anonymous. And like, there's a few reasons that she wasn't well equipped to help me. In the meantime, I had like 17 sponsors. And this is what I would do. I would show up in AA and I would suck the life out of everyone around me. I would tell you about all the dramas of my life, many of which involved men and some great ideas that I had. Because I always had another plan about how I was going to make life better by managing and controlling different aspects of it. And I would go to these women and I would tell them what I need. I think I skipped this part of a four step. I think I need to, you know, maybe we need to go back to a third step. I don't understand it. And I would tell them what I need. And I would exhaust their time and their resources and their energy. And they'd let me into their home and they'd welcome me with love and tolerance. And then I would run away and do it to somebody else. Like in this program, I just took and took and took. And so this woman who keeps resurfacing in my life as I'm like nuts, she can't help me because one, she didn't do heroin. So obviously you don't really know me. She drank, right? And I think I'm separate than all you guys. She was married. I've never been married and I have issues. So she couldn't help me for that reason. And she had less time sober than me. So how could she sponsor me? Like that's how I thought this program worked. So she'd keep showing up and trying to help me, and she'd show up and she'd call me and she'd show up at my home group or something. And I don't know how I held my breath so long in Alcoholics Anonymous. I go through a treatment and I get better. And I'm literally like dying to drink every day. And what would happen is sober, I would get arrested for violating probation because I just can't show up and take a drug and alcohol test because I have something better to do and I'm really sober. I would accumulate tons of debt. I would accumulate felonies sober. And like if you're new here or if you're like maybe not as sick as me, you might be thinking like this girl really probably has other problems. But like I truly believe like that's what alcoholism for me is. Like I have no ability to manage my life, and with the best intentions, I wanted to be a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous. I will destroy my life, and I will be a sober tornado tearing through those families' lives all over again. And what happened was I backed myself into another corner where, like, I was out of options. The license was suspended. I had 3 open court cases in separate municipalities. My family wanted nothing to do with me, and I was showing up at meetings and I was screaming for help, and nobody had like an answer for me. It seemed like. Nobody was just fixing me. And this woman, you know, I finally like just said, I surrendered to letting her help me because I was broken enough. And she turned into this like from this like bubbling, joyful, like always like creepishly enthusiastic woman screaming about Alcoholics Anonymous to like this like mean woman. And she told me that you are obsessed with yourself. And you're never going to get better until you stop worrying about your problems. You can't fix your problems or you already would have. And she told me to go worry about someone else's problems. And she told me this, to stop talking about me. And I remember the first time I went to, she let me into her home, and I went to a meeting with her and her husband, and I'm like 2 years sober, shaken. And she swore I was lying and I was actually high, but I was so full of fear and anxiety and just like discomfort, sober, that she didn't even believe me, because I have this internal condition. And no matter what I do to the outside of my life, it doesn't, it's just not calmed by that. And so what would happen is she would tell me I need to start over, and I could tell her that I could read the doctor's opinion with the book closed, and she didn't care, you know. And for the first time, I just said okay, because my ideas didn't work. And I would show up at her house, and there'd be like 10 other women there, and we'd go through this book, and I had an experience like I had never had with it, with a book that I didn't understand. Like something just started happening to me. I don't know if I was just willing enough, but like it read in a way that I never heard before, you know. And even though there were all these things that made her different from me, I believe that when she drank, she couldn't stop. I believe that something happened to her as a result of these steps, and I believe it because she talked about how miserable she felt. And, like, she just clearly wasn't anymore. I would do, like, the most... I had probably done fourth steps prior to that with other women. And like, something just didn't sink in. Like, I knew I was selfish, but I didn't get the severity of this. And mind you, like, all these people who know me in Alcoholics Anonymous, like, they probably were just waiting for me to drink. And I would do this like fifth step with her, and I'm angry at everyone and everything, and I'm angry at my mom for kicking me out, and I'm angry at her for letting me live with her, and I'm like completely delusional. I'm angry at everything and everyone in Alcoholics Anonymous and all of you, and the fact that I was promised things in here that never came true. And that woman, you know, showed me the truth about myself, which wasn't very pretty, which is that like I'm just a taker. And, like, with the best intentions, like, this is where I get myself, even sober. And sobriety's got to be more than the goal here. And, you know, like, I didn't feel relief after I did that fifth step. I felt like the biggest piece of shit in the entire world. Like, I couldn't believe that I could be that selfish and self-centered and just incapable sober, that I had so little power sober to run my life. And, like, you know, we look at this sixth step, and I'm like so ready to not be that person anymore. I'm so ready to let God do whatever he wants to make me anyone else. I'm so ready to have him take away these things that separate me from all of you. They make me unable to have a normal relationship, which make me unable to be an employee, to be a friend, to be of any use to anyone in Alcoholics Anonymous. And the seventh step, like, comes this humility that I don't know, because my ego is so big that I think I'm better than all of you guys, even though I've never even done this stuff. You know what I mean? I come to meetings at Alcoholics Anonymous, and I sit on my phone, and I judge you, and I look for my plans after the meeting, and I can't even be present in a meeting because I'm so obsessed with me. You know what I mean? And it's just a scary place to be. And I realize that, like, obviously I don't have the power to wish or will away these defects, just like I don't have the power to wish or will away my inability to stop drinking and hurting the people around me. And so I start begging God on a daily basis to take away these things which removed me from him. And I was told that I have a new employer, you know what I mean? And for the first time in my life, like, I really believed that. And I had a ton of fear about the external circumstances of my life. You know, I got arrested from that job, which was like the perfect first job sober at a Starbucks that I got walking to. I get arrested from it. And God did amazing things. He, like, promoted me, and I was managing a Starbucks, and I got arrested out of that job by police and humiliated in front of all these people because, like, I got convicted of a felony, and those consequences were of my own making. And I remember sitting with this lawyer who a few years prior I had robbed when he came to my house to help me, who said that he had a son who was just like me. And he helped me again to get me, you know, deal with that court circumstance. And I remember bawling my eyes out with him sober, so hopeless, saying, like, how am I ever going to have a job again? How is anything going to be better? How is my family going to forgive me this time? You know, one more time, God would completely show up in my life when I just made a decision to help him. You know, I can't really explain it. I'm going to try. Like, something happened That day, I did a fist up with this woman where, like, I knew that I was entirely ready to be the woman that God wanted me to be. And I knew I was entirely incapable of doing that by any decisions that I could make. I just had to, like, you know, set aside everything I thought I know about this program. What would happen is I would embark on a you know, journey to actually, like, repair the damage of my past. This isn't about I'm sorry. I would have to make a lot of amends for amends that I had already made. To amend means to fix. You know what I mean? And I'm like the sober daughter who's sober now, but I'm running away from Christmas dinner to go to an Alcathon and be with my friends. I'm the sober daughter who's borrowing more money and needs to be bailed out of the next set of consequences. I'm a taker and I can't even be present for these family members in my life. And not only that, but I don't even really want to be a part of your life. You know what I mean? Like, left to my own devices, I'm just not really that great of a person. And what would happen is, like, slowly but surely, like, I just start transforming into, like, this person that, like, I always dreamed of being. And I don't mean to sound, like, dumb when I say that, but, you know, I let my sponsor become the arbiter of my sex life. I literally told this woman that I don't know how to live and I need to know what to do with my money. I need you to show me, like, I need help. And she helped me. You know what I mean? I let this woman show me how to live. You know, I was opening up that book with women without a license. You know, they had, like, nice cars and jobs, and I was so resentful. But I just suited up and showed up and helped them, and it helped me more than it ever helped them. I learned that, like, we come to Alcoholics Anonymous and we get this free gift, and, like, what I didn't understand is, like, it's our duty to give it away. You know what I mean? And the only possible shot of me staying here is in doing that. Like, you know, we read on the way up here the doctor's opinion, and I was thinking, like, it's like what? Like, the second or third page, it talks about, like, altruism is, like, really the basis of this program. Like, I just missed that memo, or I just was too selfed up to hear it. But, like, I fell in love with Alcoholics Anonymous in a brand new way. You know, here's what I can tell you what happened is, like, my relationships were completely, completely broken at a few years sober. I have relationships in my life today that are, like, indescribably wonderful. I have a mom who's an Al-Anon, and, like, all the time we get to help. I get to, like, give sponsee's parents her number, and she gets to help them. Or she gets to, like, send her friend's kids to me, and I get to help them recover from alcoholism. Like, we have such a beautiful relationship, and we share God. And we share this spiritual way of life. I have a sister who when I made an amends to her, she asked me that I don't talk about Alcoholics Anonymous because she just doesn't believe in this thing. And my dad's the same way. And I was the type of alcoholic that, like, everybody had to know that I was sober and what I was doing and where I was going. And I was obsessed with me and my program of action in Alcoholics Anonymous. And, like, I learned to respect that and, like, build a relationship with this sister of mine that I had robbed and taken all the attention from my parents from for all these years, based on her. Like, I got to show up in her life and find out who she was and ask her what was going on with her, and, like, that was totally foreign to me. That was because I was instructed to do that in this program, and I had these little sisters that were just, like, annoying to be around to me, and I got to, like, show up in their lives and, like, be a big sister who wanted to be around them. I couldn't make myself, like, I wanted to be those things, but I couldn't make those things happen. And what would begin to happen is, like, this thing would really take off for me when I really would approach people from my past, and make an effort to make it right and take accountability for all the ways that I hurt them and ask what I had left out and realize that, like, an entire lifetime, I will never understand the amount of pain that I've caused people when I was drinking. Like, I think I still have only gotten a taste for it. And if you're here and you've had experience with amends, I'm sure you've experienced that. And if you haven't, like I knew when I did my first fifth step that I could stay in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I knew when I really went out and started to amend my past that, like, I never had to drink again. You know what I mean? I knew that I never wanted to be that person again. And, like, I've had the most unbelievable experiences with amends. Like, when I approached my old, my best friend, who I had introduced her to her favorite kind of alcohol, and she couldn't stay sober, and I tried to get her into a detox all day, and I got to, like, tell her how it harmed her, And the next morning she overdosed and died. You know, and I'm like so angry, and I realized that like God gave me that ability, that inspiration on that given day to make this all right and spend that time with her and let her mother know she tried. We tried, and you know, even now, like I continue, I really believe that like my freedom is completely based on the amends that I make in this program. A couple weeks ago, I asked God for the willingness to make some financial amends because I robbed literally everyone in the world. And I, you know, I've been just chipping away at it. And I walked into work and I got like a $500 bonus. You know what I mean? And I knew exactly where it had to go. And like, you can't make that shit up. Like, these experiences happen to me when I'm open and I'm receptive to them. Like this 10 step allows me, so here's what happens. I'm like terrified to be unemployed for the rest of my life. I'm on unemployment for a period of time and I humble myself and take a job for a telemarketing company working part-time, making less money than I ever made in my life. And like sober for a few years, like the abnormal was so normal for me that like robbing Home Depot seemed like a good idea sober because like I knew how to get money and like I did not know how to show up for a regular job. And what would happen is I would take this job working part-time for a telemarketing company, terrified because I'm a convicted felon and, like, I'm never going to be employable again. And within a few months of me showing up for God and doing his work on a daily basis, I would be promoted and I would be pulled off that job and become, like, the post-production manager of a movie. Like, it doesn't make any sense. And now I have, like, the coolest job in the entire world, you know? I spent a lot of time in Alcoholics Anonymous, like, terrified of what my future was going to look like, and, like, I could never go back to school and never do all these things, and how do people do this? And, like, I just finished my third semester of school with straight A's, and, like, I can't do that on my own. I can't even wake up and show up for life. And, like, what would happen is, like, I would continue to do these things on a consistent basis in spite of myself, and continue to get freer by making, like, these people that I had harmed a little bit freer. And like, I just realized that like, I'm one small part of this world, of this life. And like all these problems that I was so obsessed with, they get smaller. And like all of a sudden, like, you know, me as an untreated alcoholic, it looks like driving a car with no license. It's usually uninsured. My rear view mirror is facing me. I'm terrified to open mail. I don't know how to be a daughter or a sister or a friend. You know, I'm self-seeking all the time. I'm no use in Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't know how to sit still. Like, I don't know how to do life, right? And, like, all of a sudden, I find myself to be, like, a useful employee. And when I'm at work, like, I'm a worker. You know what I mean? And I am a daughter to my mother and a sister to my sisters and a friend to my friends. And like, I can't do that on my own. I can't transform those parts of myself. And I couldn't tell you the last time I thought about picking up a drink. And I can tell you that, you know, I was like the type of alcoholic who was like, I lift weights. I can't like meditate. I don't sit still. And I would become like receptive to having an experience with meditation that like transformed my entire life. And I realized that when I listen to this God, I get more answers of how to help you than when I tell him what I need. Sitting quietly is like these, like I'm an undisciplined person. I do whatever I want, whenever I want, with whoever I want. And like today I'm extremely disciplined because the more disciplined I am to these simple things in this program, the better my life is. And the more freedom I'm able to experience. Like, I just want more freedom here. I just want God to keep getting bigger because unbelievable things happen when I do that. And, like, you know, most nights I go to bed at 9:30. I wake up at 4:20 in the morning. I have a 20-minute meditation routine. I go to the gym. I come home. Like, I have a very rigid schedule. And I love it. Like, I adore it. You know what I mean? And on a daily basis, like, I have an unbelievable job that I love. We just filmed a film about bullying with, like, Tara Reid and Quentin Aaron. Like, I'm a convicted felon who got arrested from Starbucks, like, a year and a half ago, right? And I have, like, this insane job that's, like, beyond my wildest dreams. I'm in school full-time. Like, my life is very busy, but on any given day, like, the most beautiful and important thing in my life is, like, the alcoholic who calls my phone, the woman that I open up this book with, the person who I can carry this message to about the freedom that's available for all of us just by doing a couple simple things. You know what I mean? It is like the most important and incredible part of my life. Like, I didn't understand, like, I could never go to school because I just was doing it to appease other people. I couldn't go to work because, like, I just was unemployable. Like, I didn't understand that, like, when you have a purpose behind what you do, like, it's so much easier. And, like, I had a futile life with no meaning, and I was incapable of showing up for it. And, like, every day I wake up with a purpose and with a message to be carried. And as horrible as, like, that surrender felt, like, that darkness, all that anger, all the disgusting things I did when I was out there and incapable of getting here. And when I was sober are my biggest assets in helping other people. Like, because of that suffering, I'm able to use it and show you that this program works and show you precisely how we recover from this thing. The 10 step is the only reason I have a job. I used to say, like, you know, 10 and 11, like, I remember speaking in a meeting, about it, and I didn't know, like, the difference between the two. I'm like, you wake up, you do some shit, you probably write inventory. Like, I just didn't know what it was. Like, I was just like, 10, 11, 12. Like, I don't know. I didn't realize that every single step is important here. And on a daily basis, I have to watch for these things that disconnect me from this power. Like I said, like, this 11 step is extremely important. When I don't know the answer to problems in my life, I bring them to God. And the 12 step, like, gives me the ability to live this life of purpose and watch other people recover from alcoholism. I think I'm out of time. That's all.